thanks again for being willing to do this, Paula. But can you just tell me a little bit about the class in general this past year?
Yeah, it's a first grade class at the Manhattan New School, PS 290. It's a first grade class with 29 children. And we have a very interesting program in our class because we're actually able to develop, in our school, we're able to develop our curriculum in our own way. We don't have to follow exactly according to a script from the Board of Education or any other agency. So we're able to take a curriculum topic. For example, in social studies, the first grade curriculum is the community, and we're able to develop it with our colleagues or alone or with, to start with our class or with the families, and we're able to really develop that topic.
And how's the, just generally, how's the class structured so the kids come in the morning at 8:31 or whatever it is
Nowadays, let's see, what is it? When they come in at 8:20, they're very independent. They put their coats away on their own. They get their materials ready. We stop before we come in the room. We stop on the stairway, and I tell them we're going to have our research groups today. And you'll need your research journal. That's it. And or if we're having an interview, I'll say we're having an interview today, you'll need your interview journal. You know, if you have any notes about after school, you know, put them in my hand. So the kids are very independent. I like them to be independent. They put their things away. They get their materials. They help put the chairs where they belong. And they then sit down and get ready for a research group.
So you start right out with a with research groups or an interview?
First thing. Uh-huh. First thing in the morning. And that goes on for a little bit too long. You know, it's really hard to stop it. But after that, we have reading and writing workshop, depending on when we have our specials, such as music or gym. And then after lunch and recess, we'll have math, and we'll have a center time. And so we have a structure to the day.
Right.
But it begins with our social studies.
And with the reading and writers workshop, that's about an hour, 90 minutes every day, just about?
At least, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. And then the math is...
Sometimes it goes too long, and
uh-huh.
so we extend it after lunch.
Uh-huh.
So we're lucky that we're able to have a little bit of flexibility with our schedule.
And then the kids, they go home at 3?
2:35, and then there's an extended day now,
right,
which goes to 3:17 and a half.
Roughly during the day, do you know how many minutes you have them for a couple of hours? I mean, if you...
I have them all day, except for one period.
One special. And,
yeah, and lunch. Yeah.
Okay. And so you started talking, you know, social studies is obviously very important. I mean, is that the way you kind of think about the overall themes
mm-hmm.
for the year? I mean, you often, but you focus on them as social studies themes, or are they, I mean, how do you think about the themes?
The center of our universe is the social studies theme in our class. But the funny thing about social studies is you can't separate social studies from the rest of life. So, for example, if you're studying about buildings, there's a lot of science there. When we did research about buildings and they were looking at building stones, that's bricks, that's marble and granite and some of the synthetic ones that we actually learned about this year. So there's a tremendous amount of science, if you're looking for it, there's a tremendous amount of science within social studies topics. There's, of course, reading, tons and tons of reading, to do the research, and lots of opportunities for writing.
And but so, is that just a social studies something that interests you? I mean, obviously it brings in these other pieces, but why focus it on social studies?
Well, at first I love social studies, but second, kids love social studies and science, and I said they're so intertwined. They love it. They love to do research. They love to learn about things. They love it, and it's very exciting to them. And I feel that you can do the reading and the writing, and of course I love reading and writing, but you can do that in the process of doing the social studies work.
How did you come to just quickly sort of, I mean, the first day you walked in the classroom, did you organize everything around social studies?
Yep. You mean 33 years ago?
33 years
no,
ago.
No. Because in some of my earlier teaching, we had a structure to the day that was predetermined by the district. It was a different school district in New York City. And a lot of it was scripted for us. I always tried to work around those scripts. But no, I gradually... I decided that in order to be the kind of teacher I wanted to be, I had to break away from some of the scripting and develop the social studies. And so I did early on. We did social studies, and a lot of, you know, intertwined with science even before I came to the Manhattan New School.
But in those cases, it was wherever you would fit it into the day, mm-hmm. but you didn't necessarily start the day off the way you do now.
No, I couldn't have. They wouldn't have let that happen. But I gradually, as you learn to deal with some of your classroom management issues, which are always hard when you're a new teacher, as I got better at that, I learned ways of carving out more time. Working on those transitions, so a transition was quick instead of forever. Learning how to get the class quiet very quickly if you needed to say something or if you were having a discussion, to help the discussion flow without lots and lots of interruptions. So I worked a lot on management so that I could carve out more time for social studies research.
And then when you came to the Manhattan New School, that gave you the opportunity to then start the day with social studies and whatnot,
and to
get it around.
Mm-hmm, and to do it fully.
Uh-huh.
Fully, and which is a very exciting position. But I have to say to teachers that most teachers are not in a position to develop it fully the way they would like to. And so you have to learn how to work in those other situations, which I did for 20 years, and find the time, make the time to do inquiry, to do social studies or science inquiry.
And so let's talk a little bit about the topics, the particular mm-hmm. topics for this year. So you began to talk a little bit about the themes. What did you start focusing on? And then we'll talk specifically about the lights and the experiment that we observed.
Okay, the first day of school we started. I'm not into, like, wait a month and teach them how to behave themselves. First day of school, I said to the children that we would be studying about the community, the neighborhood around the school, and that we could choose, they could choose to learn about whatever they wanted about the community, which was, you know, they hardly knew what to, you know. So we made a list of things that were interesting to them. Some wanted to study about cars and trucks and motorcycles, and we put them in a little category, vehicles. Some wanted to learn about buildings. Some wanted to learn about the stores. Some wanted to learn about restaurants. And we took those topics, and I sat down at a meeting with my student teacher. And if I didn't have a student teacher, I would think about it myself. And decided which of those topics we would start with. And so this year we started with restaurants and buildings. The buildings group went all year. It went all year. It was so exciting. The restaurant research went for about 5 months. It was really, really fun and really exciting. But I want to skip to, I think it's December, when we started research about vehicles and transportation.
And why did you start vehicles then?
Why? Because the restaurant topic had gone as far as I wanted to take it, and we went back to our original list, and that was one of the big topics that so many kids were interested in.
And is this
topic? Cars and trucks and trains and subways, you know. So there were a whole bunch of kids who were interested in that. So I said, okay, that's from our original list. We're going back to that topic.
Mm-hmm.
And so we then set up a whole list of questions that we had, and we have their list of questions. It was actually on December 9th. They want to know how do they build cars, how do they make tires, what makes cars move, how do they attach the engine, how do they make the lights, how do the lights go on and off, how do they attach the wires for the lights, why do they put tape on wrecked up cars. Any question goes. How do the engines work, how do they make the cars start, and it goes on and on. I don't want to read the whole list, but they have about bus drivers and subways and so on. These questions are at the center of the research. Now, I can add questions, any parent or family member can add questions, but these are the questions that are the center of our planning and the center of our research, the focus of our research. And it's a really empowering thing. When you ask a question, however big or however small that question is, and that is the focus of your class, it could go on for a week. It could be a day's worth of research. It could be a month's worth of research. One question from this list. And then we'll go back to this list after several weeks or longer and say, did we answer this question? Did we answer this one? And we have a little checklist whether we've answered it, whether we just answered it a little bit, or whether we haven't done anything. So they see, hey, I asked a question, and that became something that the whole class did research on. It's empowering. And hopefully it's a skill that will, or an interest that will, or an approach to life that will last forever. Asking questions, figuring out how to find the answers. And we have a whole list that we developed after we developed this list of how they think we could find the answers to our questions. And, you know, some of the things that they say initially in the beginning of the school year is, well, we can ask our parents, we can ask our teacher, we can look in books. Maybe three or four ways. Now they'll say, because it's the internet, the age of the internet, they'll say, we can go to the internet. And the list is small initially, but one of the goals is to say, okay, I have a question. What are other ways of finding answers? There are lots of ways, and a lot of them are non-traditional ways of finding answers in a classroom. I mean, yes, you can go on a trip, you can go to a museum, you can go to, you know, but we go to the auto repair shop. We go to one of the kids' houses where the father is a building superintendent, so we can see how the boiler works. We have the custodian come because he knows a lot about electricity and light bulbs, and he knows a lot about cars. So our source, I try to show them the traditional sources, you know, the internet, the books, the magazines, but the non-traditional ones. And one of my favorite is the interview, because it's so accessible. The information becomes so accessible to younger kids who may not be fluent readers. You know, in first grade and kindergarten, they're not fluent readers, but an interview is a way to make a lot of information accessible. And the great thing is that there are a lot of side issues that come in when you have an interview.
So is there a general sequence to these kind of research activities? You kind of start with the general questions, and then you have, you know, where can you find out about these, and mm-hmm. then what's the next step after that?
So we have what do we know? Mm-hmm. Because then I know where to begin and who can be one of our resources. What do you know and how did you find that out? Oh, my uncle told me. Oh, my dad told me. Oh, I was at the museum. Oh, I saw that on TV. So I know where they got their information, accurate or inaccurate information. So what do we know? Then these questions, what do you want to know? And you can always add questions to that list. And then how do you think we can find answers? And from that, the very next day, we start our research. I will go through their list of questions and think about which is the most, well, if I may not know the answers to some of the questions, so I'm not going to go near those until I've done a little research first. Which of these questions, which one would be a good way to start?
And so with this research, where did you start with the vehicles?
Oh, with the vehicles, we started with the tires,
uh-huh.
The rubber tires.
Now, why was that a good place to start?
Oh, that was so much fun because, well, you know what tires are made from. Well, they knew what tires were made from, but what is rubber made from? And that was the end. They didn't know anything beyond they're made from rubber. They knew that they bounce, so that was easy. We could look at a tire. We had a tire in the classroom. They could bounce. They were flexible and so on. But beyond that, they didn't have any information, and that took us to the rainforest, where latex comes from.
So why did you pick tires as opposed to something else on the list?
Oh, because there's rubber all around. There's rubber erasers, there's rubber balls. They knew a lot about rubber, but they didn't know where it came from. And I knew it's a fascinating topic.
Have you studied it before?
I studied it one other time with a group of kids, and it's absolutely fascinating, and it can lead you to so many interesting things. For example, the study of the production of rubber, which is grown in rainforests and tropical areas. And then you have the social issues that come up with the rainforest, where they've cut down the rainforest to make rubber plantations. And so that you have social issues that can come up.
Were there other issues that you thought about starting with, or was tires just because you've done it before and the kids seemed to know something about it, but there were ways to go? That seemed like the obvious starting place.
Well, the glass windows was a very interesting topic. We did that after we did the tires. And, I mean, the kids could tell you what the windows are made from. It wasn't something they memorized, but we had done research about it. We had sand.
But, again, what made that a good topic? You know, in comparison to the tires. I
mean, the tires is interesting because the rubber's all around us,
right.
and because of the origin of rubber, it was an interesting topic. Also, I knew that I had a parent from Brazil, and that's where a lot of the rubber comes from. And last year, that I had a parent from Brazil whose father was actually involved in rubber production and actually ended up leaving that to produce synthetic rubber. And so a lot of, I knew, sometimes you choose the topic because it's fascinating to you and you know it will be fascinating to kids. Sometimes you do it because you know you have resources.
Mm-hmm. And with the glass, again, it was, how did you know that was going to be a good topic?
Well, because they know about sand. And I thought, wow, won't they be surprised to find out that glass is made from sand? The stuff from the beach is used for making sand, for making glass. And I also knew that one of their questions was about safety, about windshields. And so we did a whole study, which I'd never done before, about safety glass. I don't know if you know how they make safety glass, but it's really amazing. And my kids figured out how to make it safe so it won't, you know, fall all over the place if it breaks. Mm. They figured it out.
Mm.
Now, so I knew that would be... So I go by what resources I have, what I can get easily from the library, from a store, from the families, because I always tell them what we're studying about, so they will send in resources, who we can interview, who might be connected to one of the families,
mm-hmm.
or what's available in terms of interviews in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real. A lot of it has to do with what resources might be available.
Mm-hmm. And then what about, how did you get to the light, the question about the lights?
Well, see, the light one is a little harder for me, so I needed to wait. I needed to know more. And I didn't want to just throw the topic open and try to answer these questions because I didn't even know. Now, I don't need to know everything before I do research with the kids because I like to learn along with them, but I need to know some basic. I had to have a basic understanding about lights and cars. Now, I know a lot about light, about circuits. because, you know, I studied science in eighth grade and in high school and even in college. So I knew a lot about doing the little circuits, but I didn't know exactly how the cars operated. So I had to do some research about that. So I waited until I was ready for that topic, until I knew I had the resources. And I was really excited when I had talked to the custodian about glass, because he gave us glass that we could break after we turned it into safety glass. And I was talking to him, you know, we're doing all this research about cars. He said, oh, I used to be an auto mechanic. There I had, you know, I could have gone to one of the parents who knew a lot about cars. I could have gone back to the auto repair shop. But there was this custodian sitting there so excited about coming to our class for an interview. So I waited till I had done more research and more planning before I brought it, you know, to the research workshop.
So where did it come in the sequence? Did it come right after glass, or was there
right
something
right after
else?
Glass.
So how did you know you were ready?
Oh, with the we had done the rubber lasted for quite a while. The glass was maybe 2 weeks of daily research workshops, and we had figured, the kids had figured out how to make the safety glass. We actually put some tape, some of the transparent tape on the glass and put it in a big plastic bag, and I smashed it with a hammer, and it shattered just the way it was supposed to, you know, when you see it in a car that's been hit. We had done this, we did it several times, and we shared it with the class. Several times, you know, after each workshop, we have a share. And I felt like they knew, basically, what, as far as I wanted to take it in first grade. We did also about the side windows, because that's a different kind of glass. Mm. We tried to figure out why that glass didn't have to be as tough as the glass in the front. Mm. We did some experiments with cars, and you know, the kids actually figured it out. And then we asked some adults who knew more than we did. And so I felt like they had enough of that topic. They were very excited about it. But I didn't think there was a lot more material that they needed to know, unless they had pressed for more.
But at that point, you felt like you'd explored the lights issue enough?
The glass issue enough, right. Then we went to the lights.
But I meant that you had done your own research outside of the classroom to feel now you were ready to approach the lights question.
Yeah.
And so, fill me in on sort of what was in your mind? What things did you have to bring to bear on the study of lights?
Well, it's kind of funny because one of the issues was another social issue, and I'm always looking for social issues. I'm not just sort of a plain regular teacher, like, let's learn how the light bulb works and now let's learn how the car works. It's like I'm always looking for social issues kind of that I can pull out of these topics. So one thing I did know, because one of my sons, I have three sons, one of my sons, when he was in first grade, his teacher taught him about Lewis Latimer. Now, Lewis Latimer developed the filament for the light bulb. Thomas Edison and other workers who worked with him developed the light bulb itself, but they couldn't figure out what to burn, what would burn without disintegrating. It was bright enough, but it wouldn't disintegrate. It would just keep on lighting up. And so I knew that Lewis Latimer had done that. And I wanted that issue to come out. So we started with a light bulb, a big light bulb that the custodian gave me. It was one of the old-fashioned light bulbs. And you could actually see the wiring inside, the wire inside, and you could see the filament. And so we had a couple of those, and the kids just did observations. What do you know about this? What are you seeing?
And what else did you...
That was the beginning. That's
how we began. Was the beginning, but did you also have a sense of other activities and other kinds of research that was going to go on?
Yeah, and so what I was anticipating was them trying to figure out what it was that would burn. And so we did a kind of, sort of a role play. I gave them a little paper clip that I had opened up, and we tried to figure out, and they drew a little light bulb, and we tried to figure out what would burn, and we kept saying it couldn't fall apart, it had to be bright, and it had to last. And so we tried straw, we tried hair, we tried anything we could find, string, yarn, and we just did the experiment because we were reading about the experiment.
But you weren't actually burning hair.
We weren't burning anything.
You were imagining what would happen.
We actually, and I'll show you a picture of it. We were actually trying it and then saying, "Nah, that didn't work." It was funny. It was a fun lesson. There's one of them here. The other one is somewhere in this pile. But I'll show you this one. Here is what we did. They worked in pairs, and they drew a light bulb, and then they taped down the two wires like in a regular light bulb, and then they experimented. They put straws. I had a whole bunch of junk stuff, you know, straws and yarn and string, and they went around the room also and found other things. And then they pretended, "Nah, didn't work. Nah, didn't work." So in order to find out what they did burn, we went back to the book. We'd read the book a little bit, and then we'd try the experiments, like we were working with Thomas Edison and Louis Latimer. And we went back to the book to find out, because I said, "Well, so how are we going to find out what they actually burned?" And we went. They said, "Well, let's go back to the book again, because I want them to know that we have a source of information, and it's not me. I'm not the source of information. The book had the information, and we had a couple different books. And we found out it was a carbon filament, and we read more about it. The kids made these." And the next day we went back to this and we took a little closer look at the book about Thomas Edison, and it didn't mention Louis Latimer. So, but the other book said Louis Latimer did it. Well, why isn't he in the book? And we'd done a lot of research, you know, learning about Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and during the year. And Zoe said, "Maybe it's kind of like the Martin Luther King thing." And somebody else said, "Maybe it's kind of like the Rosa Parks thing, with people kind of getting left out." Which I thought was kind of a great analogy, a great perceptive analogy. And I said, "Indeed, that's what happened." And we went back to the book again, to the Louis Latimer book, and that's exactly what it said.
And that's not just a goal for them. So that's one of the goals you begin the year with, right? Mm-hmm. Is the sense that you want to expose kids to aspects of history that they might not mm-hmm. get in the history books. And I mean, so are there, that's one of the, so it's not as if you just planned that for this lesson, but you knew that's something you want to keep coming back to.
Yeah, and I didn't want to do it as a separate lesson. Like, okay, boys and girls, today we're going to learn about Louis Latimer. But I did it in the context of the study about lights in cars.
Mm-hmm. And are there other kind of overarching issues like that you try to hit on, address over the mm-hmm. course of the
all
year?
All through the year. Social justice issues.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That are infused throughout.
Yeah. So, for example, when we learned about the rainforest in the context of rubber tires, we saw that people stole the land away, cut down the rainforest, irregardless of who lived there and who needed that land for their very survival. And so that became a big issue with them.
And So then the first part of the lights work was looking at the light bulbs. But you also started the whole lights piece with a set of questions about lights.
They had their questions.
So that came before you went to the light bulbs,
Before we did anything, what do you know about light bulbs?
Right.
What do you want to know? And these are their questions. There are how many questions? So many questions here. There are 16 questions. How are lights made? What are those materials made from? How do they put the lights in? How do they turn the lights on? Why are the lights so bright? How do the lights go on? Are the lights made out of glass? Do all cars have the same kinds of lights? Great questions. Some of these are actually adult kind of questions. And then how can we find the answers? And this is posted in the room. These are both posted in the room. Look in books and magazines, ask people, interview people, ask an expert in our class, observe a real car, go to the library, ask Steve, the science teacher, ask an expert's daughter or son. And that was a riot because we had a teacher visiting from Connecticut, and often I'll engage the visitors in a little discussion, ask the kids to tell about their research. I said to the teacher, I had the kids say, do you know anything about rubber tires? And she said, yeah. It turned out her father and her uncle worked at Armstrong Tire. And also that her father said, if you want to drive a car, you have to learn about cars. So she, when they explained, we also studied about the engine later. When they explained to her how the engine worked, because they'd made little engines out of paper towel thingies. And then she added information for us that she knew. So anyway, so ask an expert's daughter or son, make observations, go to the auto repair shop, find nonfiction poems about lights, because we had done a lot of nonfiction writing, including poetry, nonfiction poetry writing, and do role plays, go on field trips.
But back to the questions. I mean, aren't you worried when you get 16 specific questions like that that you're not going to be able to address them all?
We don't address them all.
So how do you handle that?
I pick and choose.
But how do you? Do they know that? I mean, how do you help prepare them for the fact that their question might not get answered?
Well, in the earlier studies, we made a checklist of the ones that we had studied, the ones we hadn't studied. And when I say we're going to be stopping this study right now, our research group about rubber, we're finished doing that research. And I'll say to them, and I don't ever want you to ask another question about rubber tires. And they look at me like, if this were earlier in the year, they'd look at me like, what is she talking about? Because they know I love questions. And so they say, you're kidding us. You're joking with us. I said, I sure am. I said, you can study about rubber tires or about rubber for the rest of your life. And I know we didn't answer all the questions. So if there are any questions that you want to continue to learn about, go right ahead. And I even sometimes say, well, how could you do that if you're not in school? And so that they know we're not going to get to all the questions.
Right, and so then obviously you picked first was the light bulb because you, for the reasons you talked about it, mm-hmm. the Lewis Latimer issues, and what mm-hmm. were some of the other questions that you wanted to focus on?
Okay, how do the lights go on in the car? That was where we went next.
And why did you want to focus on that? Why was that a good topic?
Well, we had done work with making circuits. We did a little experiment making circuits. In the classroom, that you have that on the
right.
Tape.
So why did you want to go in that direction? Well, how did you know that was going to be? This question was worth pursuing.
They needed to know how a light goes on. That right. You need a power source, and you need some wiring, and you need a bulb. That's the basic of what a light is all about. So they needed to know basically what a light is all about before they could go to the car.
Right, and figure out how the lights went on in the car.
Yeah, so that after we did a lot of work with batteries and bulbs, batteries and bulbs and wires, then we talked about, well, how could, and I sat them down at the beginning of the research. Okay, so we know about batteries, we know about the bulb. How can they get the car lights to go on. Let's look at our list here. We have the question, how do the lights go on?
And so where did that, so what was it, how did they begin to answer that?
That was one of the great, it was such a great discussion. Well, actually, let me just back up a little bit. We hadn't done the battery thing yet.
Right.
We had looked at the bulb.
Right.
Then I said, well, how would the lights go on in a car? Because we know that lights, you know, we plug them in.
But you didn't study that. You just knew that
people
know. The kids know.
They're first graders, and they basically knew that you plug the light in. They have lamps, you plug the light in, you plug all these different technologies, the radio and so on, you plug it in, the TV. How would you get the car lights to go on? Because we can't plug them in. And I just love those big, open questions. Mm-hmm. There's not one answer. And that's the beauty of inquiry teaching. If you ask a question, if you think about your questions ahead of time, at least some of the questions, open questions, questions that lend themselves to inquiry, not, here's the answer, I got it, first kid raises their hand, they've got the right answer. No, you ask a question that will be more difficult to answer. And you'll have some kids with a great understanding and some kids with no understanding and everybody else in the middle. So we had this fabulous discussion about how the car could work, how the lights would go on without a plug. And there were answers that were like, you know, neither here nor there. And then there were other answers that had some leads that showed some understanding. Like somebody said you have to have some kind of power. What do you mean power? And somebody said, well, some kind of electricity. I said, but you can't get it because you don't have a plug. Don't you need a plug? And that would get another kid would say something. Well, you know, I have a flashlight. I said, what? And I knew we were going somewhere there. Somebody talked about a flashlight. And then somebody else shouted out. You're not supposed to shout out, but somebody called out. There's a battery. So somebody says, oh, yeah, I have a battery. And so what we were doing was piecing together information. This kid knew something. And I just kept helping pull the information together, constructing an answer.
So where did they get to at that point?
So then I said, but, okay, a battery. But, so we're going to, so... Then we figured out battery and we need wires and we needed a bulb, and I had prepared for this lesson. I kind of knew where we were going because we had to figure out the essence of a circuit. Okay, I had the materials; they were hidden away. I pulled them out. Zoe said, Paula, you have everything here. It's like your house. She said, all you need to do is order a bed. And I just laughed hysterically. And there were other adults in the room. We laughed hysterically because it's true. And I want to speak to you directly, to teachers. Accumulate stuff. Maybe your classroom won't be as pretty and neat as the next classroom, but accumulate stuff. Have things around from previous work that you've done. So that if you need some batteries, if you need some bulbs, if you need some paint, if you need some, you have it there. You don't have to always scramble. Or work closely with the parents and tell them the kinds of things you need. Because the money doesn't come easily in the school system. So you get help getting those resources. We sat for 2 days doing the research with the batteries before we got back to the car again.
So, and when you did the research with the batteries, and part of it was the experiment.
It was an experiment,
yeah. But did you do other research? I mean, how did you get from the kind of hypothesis that, you know, there's a battery here that to get to the bulb to the experiment?
Very simply. It was very, very, very simple. Not complex at all. Okay, so let's take some bulbs and some batteries and some wire. Let's see how it goes.
So you started there.
That's it.
So you started that, you gave them that. Now, did you give them other vocabulary, or had you given them the language around circuits?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Anything like that?
I tend not to name things until the kids have an understanding. Mm-hmm. So we didn't talk about circuits for a couple days after they had created a circuit. Mm-hmm. So they divided, I divided them into little groups. There were some groups that were, you know, two kids, usually it was two. Sometimes it was a boy and a girl. Sometimes it was a kid who was a little more developed in terms of science and, mm-hmm. And social studies understandings, with a child who didn't have that, so that they would support it, they would work together. Sometimes a child who didn't know a lot of English, I put them with a child who would be very supportive of them, mm-hmm. and that they would try to communicate. Mm-hmm. So the groups, you know, I divided them into groups of two, and they each had the wires, and the wires were already opened up at the end so that, you know, the metal was exposed. Mm-hmm. And they had the just D batteries and the little light bulbs. And they just experimented and experimented and experimented.
And that's so that's what we have on video, is the mm-hmm. kids experimenting with that and developing the circuits. But just, I mean, thinking back on that that discussion and those experiments, I mean, how did it go? How did you feel about it afterwards?
Oh, it was really a lot of fun. It was very exciting. You can see there was a lot of excitement in the air there. I could have told them, it's easy to do it. Teachers do that all the time. They always tell the answers. But if you, which is my policy, like zip it and don't tell the answers, they're pretty smart little people. They are pretty smart. And they will figure it out, because one kid knows this, one kid knows that, one kid tries this, one kid tries that. And together they construct, again, they construct a solution. And so that's what they did.
But that makes it sound so easy and almost magical. I mean, did it really go the way you expected it to? Were there bumps in the road? Were there anything?
Yeah.
So, like, what kinds of things did you remember that weren't?
There have to be bumps in the road, because I wasn't giving them a little holder for the battery and the little thing where you can slip the wire in, you know, the way we had in maybe in high school, we had a little holder. So they had to hold it. They had to help each other. Which kids don't always, some are not very good at. You'll see two kids who had to kind of learn how to work together. So kids working together. Sometimes the wire wasn't attached at the right place. One was attached at the right place, the other wasn't attached at the right place. They had to figure out, where would you put the wire on those little bulbs? On the mm-hmm. side, on the bottom, on the light? They didn't know. They really had never had that experience. So there were plenty of bumps. That's the fun of it. Because when you get over the bumps, that's where the learning is. And not only that's where the learning is, but that's where one child can teach the next child. If I wanted it to work nicely and neatly, I would have said, now, look, the way my teachers did when I was a kid, here's the battery. Put the wire here, put the other wire here. I could have showed them the whole operation. Simple. I could have done it and be done in 10 minutes. But it was messy. But when the first group got the light to light up for 1 second, there was such joy and such excitement and such, whew, you know, it was like, it was really exciting. And that's the fun of it all, mm-hmm. you know? Are those moments where they figured it out, and then they became the teachers for others.
Right. Well, that was a moment where you pulled everybody back together mm-hmm. and had one group do a demonstration. So why did you do that?
I did that because I want them to teach each other. I want them to be the resource, not me.
But
I want them to be in charge of the learning and the teaching. Now, even after I pulled them into that circle again, and that little group explained to the others, many of them still didn't get it. They still had some struggle.
But you were saying before that you wanted them to figure it out themselves, right?
Yeah.
But so how different is it that you're having you know, instead of you explaining it to the kids are explaining it to the kids. Why is that better?
Okay. If I explained it to the kids, I could probably explain it really well, and they'd really understand a lot about it. When the kids are explaining it to each other, they're sort of approximating an understanding, and so there's still a lot of open territory there for the other kids to experiment. And there are a lot of contradictions in teaching, because I don't want me to be the teacher and to always be filling them with information, but I want to empower them to be the teachers, and I want them to do a lot of it on their own, a lot of that experimenting and learning on their own. So I kind of want everything. and I really have to say, the teaching is not neat, and it's not straightforward. It's a little complicated, because I want to empower them to be teaching each other, and I want to empower them to figure things out by themselves or with a partner or with a group. I want both. The one thing I don't want to do is me be the person who's always got the answer, the teacher being the great, you know, the great teacher who knows everything and is going to fill them with the answers that, and then they can take the test. Mm-hmm. I want them to be teachers. Remember when I asked them, what do you know? In the very beginning of each study, what do you know about this? I said, I do that so that they can help teach. So there's a little bit of them helping teach, other people teaching, other, whether it's family members or people in the community or people from our school, and using the resources that they have inside them. So it's all of the above.
So you got them started on their experiments. You saw one group that was successful. You brought them back to do a demonstration and give some kind of give some little more guidance, and then you let them go again. But what happened to the group that had already figured it out? What did they do?
Well, I mean, they kept on going. They tried it, and I had them work for a while. I had them work with another group. I also, on the second day, because we definitely weren't finished with it the first day, the second day, we tried to, I posed the question, how would we make it, after a lot of the kids had already gotten it, I think everybody had pretty much gotten it, and we also figured out that if we taped it down, it would help keep everything more steady. After everybody kind of got it the first day, we tried, some of the kids who were really, really, I mean, they were all, like, totally fascinated. How could we make it brighter? Because, you know, somebody was saying when we first asked questions, how do they make it so bright? So how could they make it brighter? And you should have seen what happened. Some said, well, we could get a bigger light bulb. Some said we could get different wires. Some kids said we could get more batteries. And so I let them experiment again.
So what kind of materials did you bring in for them?
There was a whole box of batteries, D
different
batteries.
Sizes or
no, D batteries, just D batteries. And you know what they did? They made a circuit with two batteries, taped them together with this nice strong tape, and they screamed. They screamed. There was another research group going on in the other part of the room, and it was like the whole room was disrupted because they got it to be so much brighter. So of course, then somebody had to say, okay, we're going to try three. And then we had to get our wires longer to it, so we cut more wires. And the funniest thing, and you'll see it in the video, you'll see the assistant teacher Julie, who's just really wonderful. She had never worked with a circuit before, and batteries and bulbs and all that. And she was so fascinated that she walked away with the bulbs, the batteries, and the wire, and went off to the paint area, which was kind of quiet, nobody was in there, and tried to figure it out herself. She was so fascinated with it, and she came back, and it was fun. The kids enjoyed it because she was learning along with them. Anyway, so they tried three, some kids tried four, and they were just like, and then the bulbs started blowing. But they're little, so there's no harm.
Uh-huh.
They're little bulbs, so we learn something from that too.
Huh. So just back to the day that we were observing. So you must have been getting worried about the time. Everybody's working on their bulbs, you know. The time is ticking away. You know, were you thinking about cutting it off before everybody got it? I mean, you sort of have a choice there. Do you help everybody get to the end point? Do you wait? How were you thinking about that?
I helped. I didn't help. I helped other kids intervene to support the groups that hadn't quite gotten it. And you can see in the tape, I also intervened with some kids not only who weren't cooperating, weren't working together, and sort of help them navigate working together. And I help put tape on. The tape is kind of wide and a little hard to work with. So I actually intervened by helping tape the wires to the batteries so that it would go a little better. Yeah, I didn't want groups sitting there like, oh, we didn't do it. But we had enough kids who knew how to do it. Who helped? They helped the other groups, and so each group had their moment. So there was like a tremendous amount of screaming. Yay! We got it! We got it! We got it! They were so excited. Now I never did that kind of stuff until I was in maybe eighth grade, then high school. But first graders can do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they showed me they could do it.
Mm-hmm. But so then you finished, basically everybody got it, and you pulled everybody back together. And so what were you trying to accomplish when you pulled everybody back together?
Okay, there was a pulling together in the beginning. Sort of in the middle when the first group got it. And then there was a little pulling together, and we made a picture of what we had done. That was the circuit.
So what was the point of kind of bringing them together after they finished their experiments?
I wanted them to kind of summarize what they had figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we named it. But then we went back to it the next day because it was too much fun. We couldn't just stop.
But when you say you named it, what do you mean by that?
We named it. We called it a circuit. We knew the wire, we knew the bulb, and we knew the battery. And after we drew a picture of what we had done, and they recorded that in their journals also.
Right.
Wow, that's amazing. You know what? And sometimes I'll say, I learned about that in college. That's called a circuit. Because I asked if anybody knew what that was called. Nobody did. But we named it. And it wasn't naming it so they could take a test and you know, give that name, you know, get the right answer on the test. But just that what they had invented, they had figured out, was something that scientists have figured out and named. And so the name is not essential.
But so then you haven't put the diagrams in their notebooks.
Yeah.
Now, did they ever go back to those diagrams or those notebooks?
We use them every day.
But to that particular picture, that's a record of what they did today, and then they move on.
Sometimes we'll refer back to it, and sometimes it's just there.
Right. And so then the day is over, and you bring everybody back, because they've been having several different research groups work, and you have a little group sharing of what goes on in the research. And what's your goal with that?
Well, because there are two different groups happening at the same time, I want to make sure that what this group knows is also the basics of what that group did are known to the other group. Mm-hmm. I don't want somebody to say, well, I got left out of that. I don't know anything about the buildings, the study of the buildings, or I don't know anything about the study of the lights. But I want the whole class to be familiar with the topics.
Mm-hmm.
And the most exciting, well, so the class sits and the research groups sit together. Each group sits with its own group. They look at each other. Notebooks are down, journals are down, pencils are down, and an adult will lead the discussion. The kids participate in the discussion. And it's supposed to be brief. It's supposed to be brief. But sometimes it's so fascinating that it's a little difficult, and sometimes I have to use a lot of self-control to like say, okay, stop. We're coming back to this tomorrow. Don't worry.
Right, but this time you tried to say that, and then you didn't. And you ended up, so you wanted to do a quick share, and it wasn't so quick. So you ended up doing the demonstration, right?
The group, yeah, we did the demonstration.
But isn't that you teaching again? I mean,
that was the group teaching the other group. Because the other group wasn't going to get a chance to do all that, because they mm-hmm. were studying about something else. Mm-hmm. But they had the opportunity to do that at center time, at the end of the day.
So then you left the batteries and the circuits. But here's a good example. So they come to that experiment
right.
with a lot more knowledge and an example mm-hmm. of what the correct answer is, mm-hmm. with a lot of input from you and from other kids. So why wouldn't it be better to let them explore it and figure it out themselves too?
Because their needs, that took a whole period of time with adult participation. At center time, there's not going to be that. Now, that could happen. I guess you have to pick and choose what you're going to do. You can't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have time at center time to sit with the new group to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have plenty of teachers who can, plenty of little, you know, kid teachers who
right.
can do it. I think that the basic thing I want to do is work with that research group and mm-hmm. let them become the experts on this.
Mm-hmm. And you do the same thing, so with the other group, was working on a play or something?
They were working, I don't know if they were working on the play at the moment or they were studying, doing research about buildings.
I think it was a play.
If they were working on a play, that was with a student teacher,
uh-huh.
the play about Elizabeth Jennings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now does that come back in the centers as well? Or?
They talked about, at the share,
uh-huh.
they talked about their play, their progress in writing the play. No, nothing was done at center time with the play.
Right, but generally, if there are two different research groups working, it could come in, you know, you might have something that kids could explore in the centers afterwards.
Yeah, for example, when a group was learning about how bricks are made for buildings, part of the buildings research, we had the student teacher had some clay,
mm-hmm.
and that was available at center time.
Mm-hmm.
Now the play that the kids wrote, we eventually produced for the whole class, and then for all the families
mm-hmm.
at the end of the year, and we produced it for the whole school.
Mm-hmm.
So,
so why do you do? Why do you have two separate research groups running at the same time? Why not have everybody do the lights?
If I were alone with the first grade class, I might have everybody do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would try to find a family member or some kind of a resource person who could come in and take care of the second group.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think first graders or kindergartners can really manage sustained research in the beginning, certainly in the beginning of the year. Even toward the end of the year, it's pretty tough. And I want my student teachers to have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great having two groups.
Mm-hmm.
I want the student teachers to have an opportunity to develop a research group and to really develop and to really work on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing is that I've always found when there are two groups that there's sometimes something you'll find in common. And first, each group is going to learn from the other, so that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And kids will go home and they'll say, oh, I found information for the other research group. That happens a real lot,
mm-hmm.
that they'll try something at home or find information. So they're always swapping information and sharing resources. But so often there's something that happens, and I'm not quite sure. Maybe it's just life is that way. But there'll be something in common. So I'll just give you an example of when the buildings research group was doing research about pulleys being used in the elevators of the buildings. And the kids had done a lot of experiments. They figured out how to make a pulley. Before they knew what a pulley was, they made their own little pretend elevators, you know, with a cup and a string attached to it. And they wound it over their fingers, which is basically a pulley. They mm-hmm. wound the string over the thing. And my group was trying to figure out how, we were studying about restaurants earlier in the year, we were trying to figure out how food from Emma's father's country, Chile, how it would get loaded onto the ships, the boxes, the big containers would get loaded onto the ships, how they could get lifted up. And one of the kids from the buildings group said, a pulley. That's like that. A pulley. Of course, he said. It was a great moment. The adults were just like cracking up. Because, yes, he took the information about the technology that they had figured out in their group and it applied it to our problem. So that sharing of the research, there's such phenomenal discussions. Also, they learn how to listen to each other.
Mm-hmm. And another opportunity for teaching.
And the kids kind of from each group kind of synthesize the information so that they can share it, because you can't tell them everything you did. So it's just a marvelous opportunity for learning to have that share. You know, unfortunately, there's not enough time in the day to let share go as long as it could, but we often have said, okay, we're coming back to this tomorrow, don't worry.
Great. Well, that's a lot of fun. So I have another tape, so we can finish up a little bit. But
Is it going okay?
I think it's great. So,
I didn't think it would be that easy. It's easier than I thought.
The talking about it?
Yeah, because I wasn't quite sure how we were going to deal with that and this. So I think this is easier the way we're doing it.
This is all about, it's the same kind of planning, you know. Yeah. So I thought about going to the, you know, to the clips and looking at it. I realized as we were going that I could just kind of prompt you to talk about those particular points that I think we wanted to talk about. It was easier than going to that. So
that would have been so complicated.
It would have. We can still, but if I want to just switch the tape, and do you want to take a quick break?
I need the bathroom.
Yes. Actually, if you want to go, I'll show you. Go back. I'll get some water too while we're doing that.
Are we locked in?
I think we are. But there we go. It's basically, if you look, you remember those muscle pictures in your back? You have one that like kind of runs along the spine. It's the up and down mode, which I think is why I couldn't stand up.
Yeah,
I sit down. It's not as, it's less, there's not as much strain.
But it maintains on the nerve that ran up and down there.
I think the bottom line is that it's inflamed, it's swollen. So, and by getting swollen, then it impinges on these nerves that run down here. So you learn a lot about these things, and a lot about what people don't know. You know, the doctors say, oh, I don't know what it is. You know. But so hopefully I'm getting better and we'll be ready for squash. We'll see.